show. This is your Weaver of Context, Caroline Casey, and we're about to have welcome back our ally from last week to do part two on Bridget, Owen O'Sullivan. He will teach me how to pronounce his name correctly. But first, just a little bit. Owen and his family just did a splendid presentation on Bridget, and he will tell us how we can get hold of that recording, and they're launching their community thing that he will also tell us about. So, yeah, midwinter, all over the place. So this is Bridget's Day. Tomorrow is Candlemas, and then true midwinter is February 4th. I'll be doing a presentation on astro-mytho-navigational guidance and crafting our vessel for the wild seas of 2024 for Ubiquity University. And then February 6th, launching Midwinter to Equinox Trickster Training Council Dream News. The more words, the more metaphors, the more myths, the more avenues of participation in dreaming the world into being. Cultural advantage goes to those cultivating an intimacy with the power of symbols. February 6th is open to everybody, just to get a little taste, and details for both of those things are at coyotenetworknews.com. So, here we are. So we do welcome the return of Owen O'Sullivan, that we invite Bridget, trickster peacemaker, to bring necessary miracles to cool out the conflagration. It's part of this show's dedication for 800 years to tease mythology, you know, mythic forces, you know, into actual world to make the world tangibly better. If we don't know what to do, invite in what does, and this midwinter time is so good for that. So Owen is a singer, composer, and teacher. Most recently, he performed his new arrangements of Irish folk songs with his brother Molly and the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra String Quartet, drawing on his study of philosophy and ancient civilizations. Yes, okay. Owen works with leaders in creativity, healthcare, and technology, including the Stanford University Storytelling Project, and more things than we have time to list. The website is Turas Danam. He will tell us how to get there, but it's on all of our promos everywhere. Welcome, Owen.
Caroline, so great to be back. Thank you so much for the invitation and to be here with your visionary activists and the KPFA community. Yeah, wonderful to be back. And I saw that you joined us earlier today on our presentation on St. Bridget. So thank you so much for joining us on that.
Yeah, no. I was scribbling notes, and we will amplify. There was so much, and Noreen's beautiful poetry and ritual and the rituals to be done. So, yeah, I was just doing an astrology consult for a lovely woman in Dublin, and she goes, "Oh no, tonight is the night you put out the cloth." Anyway, so I guess the rules are loose. The rules are loose. let's bring everything into play, because you know there's so much danger and cruelty and everything in the world. That you know. So the dispensation, because all you know, it is true exact midwinter on February 4th. But so it's all around now, right? So the tradition is, maybe you take it you take it and give it back to us here. You put out a cloth, a scarf, a something tonight or last night.
That's right. The broth breatha, it's called. Breatha is the Irish, the Gaelic for Bridget. And a broth is a cloak or a cloth. And the tradition is, now it really, the rules, yeah, like, I mean, if you show a rule to an Irish person, and they'll wince with anarchic reaction. But the one thing that I love about the Celtic traditions is that the feast day isn't the point of it at all. It's the night before the feast day where all the magic happens. So traditionally, St. Bridget's Day would have been celebrated yesterday, you see, into today.
But we're delinquents
here. Always
in
the Celtic traditions, you have this concept of dynamism, of threshold, of change. So you're not so for example, like if we were to celebrate your birthday, you'd actually celebrate it the night before, you see. And of course, you'd stay up all night until midnight, and then you've celebrated your birthday. It's not on the day at all. So traditionally, my mother would have told me, yeah, that she'd put out the brat breed last night. But Noreen, my mother, has given a very special dispensation to all of the listeners of KPFA and the Visionary Activists. And Noreen has said, my Irish mammy has said, if you put out your red cloth this evening, it can be a very small little symbolic piece of material. Yeah. And it has to be the color red, this fiery color associated with Bridget. And you put it out tonight. And in the morning dew and mist will suffuse the cloth. And then this cloth is a healing cloth that you have to take out of, to place on your altar or take out of your little magic box for the year. And then there are traditions, then the following year, you might then burn that or dispose of that cloth and put out the next one. So that's the broth breed. It's a healing medicinal talisman.
Wonderful. And then Noreen also said that you leave a door open so that Bridget can come in, even though we're heretics over here and doing it a day late, although the person in Ireland said, no, tonight's the night. But you leave a door open so that Bridget could come in, yes?
That's right. Of course, depends what neighborhood you're in, of course. You know, if you're in a more urban area, it might be symbolic, you see, of leaving the door of your heart open. Or imagine the possibility of someone or some piece of information, you know, surprising you, knocking on your door and opening your horizons. Yeah, so this is the time, you see. It's midwinter in a lot of calendars, but in Ireland, the 1st of February, again, was seen as the dynamic threshold into springtime. So this was seen as the start of springtime. You're bouncing into towards the halfway toward the vernal equinox. So, this is the time to open the doors or to imagine the doors opening. But it's a time of perseverance too, because when you do open your door at this time of the year, a terrible cold blast of air can come in. And so this time of the year reminds us around endurance and persistence and tenacity, that these things are so important, and they would have been so important to our ancient forefathers and mothers, because this time of year they were coming out of winter, stores were being depleted, you know, and were lowering very quickly. And the spring crop was a long way away, you know, from now. So the lesson here is that the promise of springtime is coming, and you must endure and persist on the path, and the promise of future bounty will be fulfilled.
Well, we're always so grateful for supportive fresh starts, right? Times of deeper dedication going, no. And I love John O'Donohue saying, may you respond to the call of your gift and find the courage to follow its path. We go, well, that's good. And we say, you know, that blessing is a way of participating in dreaming the world into being. And we go, oh, that's really good. Okay. And then just to syncretize, because, you know, Bridget's got friends. Marie Laveau, the great voodoo queen of New Orleans, said at powerful moments now, we go, she said, first you tidy your house. If she wanted to get something really done, she'd tidy your house, you know, and she'd open a door and sweep out the past. And then she'd open a door to welcome the new and to welcome Bridget, and then she'd go out and kick butt. So those are also good things to do, going, all right, we clean, we tidy the house, we tweak it until the house sings, tweaking the house until it sings, just with the lighting of the candles and all. Mm. And yes, honoring the thresholds. From your presentation today, you know, Michael started by saying, interruption is our ally. I just took note of that, going, right, how to dance with interruption. Because it invites us to spiral, doesn't it? I mean, we could resist, but like, no. Or if you have, you know, animals who are like, it's supper time, and you go, no. And you go, oh, no, it's time to get up. You're right. Okay, the interruption is welcome. So is it kind of like the interruption is welcome, like the door is open, like we are dancing and cooperating with everything? Could we go that way?
Yes, and of course, I'm thinking too of the great tech revolutions out your neck of the woods. Talk about disruption, you know, and that this is the key for great growth, is that you take something that's old and staid and established and you shake it up. And in doing that, of course, it's terribly disruptive, you know, in the worst sense of the term. But also it's the way to shake up a system to generate more power and more productivity. You know, when we shake ourselves up, we can fall into ruts of repetition. And these ruts of repetition can become rote and calcified and leech us of our vitality and our energy. And it's only when we're shaken up can we open ourselves to that vibrance, that life force, you know? And it's very easy for us to fall into those cycles for some reason. And for some reason, it's very hard for the human mind to perceive the very gradual descent into monotony, or even, I'm thinking of even into addiction too, you know? And how do you get out of monotony or addiction? You have to break something. Something has to be interrupted, disrupted. Eruption is another great word, you know, where something breaks through. And so this time of year is represented by the eruption. In Ireland now, the snowdrops come up through the earth at this time of year. They burst through the darkness, the ground that has been frozen and dead for all of these weeks in front of our eyes. And now we have this new green. And of course, the color of that flower brilliantly is white. And it's white against the darkness that it has come out of. The very opposite thing, you know, almost like capsizing something, turning something upside down. So I think that's what he was referring to when he was talking about disruption and interruption, you know, that
well,
kind of
is and,
there
and everything
to assist us and facilitate us, yeah.
Right. No, that's great. Ruts. And, you know, many of us might feel in need of emerging and recombobulating. You know, things have gotten to a crisis maybe in our personal lives and the collective life because they're all connected. And that idea also of liberating, lightening, I like that. Yeah, everybody listening gets a bag of party favors that includes a bag of liberating lightning to toss at any closed circle to liberate it into a spiral, and that includes at ourselves, right? If there's any tired pattern, I'm so bored with this part of myself, I've been lying to myself, just deliberate. And it reminds me, I mean, everything, you know, everything back to nature, to myth, to nature. If you impregnate a log with shiitake mushrooms, you let it be dormant for I think quite a long time, like 6 months. And then you come up to the log and you take it and you go and you shake it. You go bang, bang, bang. And then mushrooms. So Wow. It's like, this is kind of like, you know, all right, we've been dormant. We've been, you know, little spores implanted in a log. And then it's like, whoa, okay, an interruption, a shaking of the log. We go, all right, we will fruit now. So.
Beautiful. And yeah. You were also mentioning there that a beautiful image of that woman, you know, disrupting the rhythm of her household and taking the everyday mundane mess and disorder and shaking it up and cleaning house and brushing out, you know. So and that too reminds me of ritual, actually.
Yes.
And for many of us in the modern world, we've become very alienated from ritual. Not all of us now, but a great many of us have become alienated from the beauty and the facility and the usefulness of what ritual is. And ritual is really about beautifying your space and your what you do within that space. It's bringing beauty into your life. And we used to have these extraordinarily beautiful ritual spaces, you know, these churches and cathedrals, and you went in and time became codified and beautified through sound and through movement and through light, you know, the light coming through stained glass. And so today, if you're not part of one of these very beautiful traditions, we have to reinstate beauty into our lives. and make that break and say, now I'm taking this moment to do something different with my life, with my body, and I'm going to light that candle, you know, or ring that bell, or whatever the equivalent is that's not running around in our coffee-fueled existence and then collapsing on the couch to watch Netflix, you know? So if there's any little moment, even and it can be even 30 seconds, you know, where we take that moment and say, now is my little beautiful time. And that's really, that's at the root of ritual. I've talked about this, you know, a lot with my mother, Noreen, and she just published a book. I read from it at the start of the session. And she just published a book called Sacred Rituals, which is a simple handbook of everyday prayer, how people, and it's an interfaith book, you know, for people of any faith and people of no faith, to bring that beauty, that sense of discipline into our lives where we can create that little sacred space. And it's so important and, again, so easy for us to forget and to lose amidst our busy and pressurized lives, you know.
Yes. No, that's right. And so ritual, one way I like to play with it, a ritual is any physical thing we do that we imbue with dedicated symbolism. So we can sweep the floor or we can sweep out the past while we're sweeping out the floor. And absolutely bringing in beauty and Venus. And I like to say some things are always true, but there are times when they're truer. So I always am looking at the choreography, the planetary mythological choreography of now. So you were just inviting in Venus. and Venus is now in Capricorn. The beautiful is in the realm of the useful, right? So it's the famous saying, you know, let us have only those things in our homes that we know to be useful and believe to be beautiful. And that includes partners. So Venus now, it leads, you know, so as your beautiful event was unfolding today, you know, I track these things. So when you began, the moon was at 27 degrees of Libra, whose image is a person in deep gloom, unnoticed, a glowing circle of angels surrounds them. And I love that. And it was, you're just beginning it, because when we're alone, we can be the person in deep gloom. But when we gather, as you did today, as you're convening, whatever, as we're doing, as we're doing now, when we gather, we're the glowing circle of angels. And then as your event unfolded, the moon changed 1 degree, and it's so perfect. It's like there's such wonderful order all around that, you know, just as you were talking about, you know, women as bringers of peace and social change and Mary Robinson, I want to come back to that, you know, everybody matters. The moon changed degrees, and her image was men toiling in a dark pit, a woman calmly lowers a rope. Anyway, I love that image too, because it's like, lads down there. Here's a rope. You can climb out anytime you want. Wait, I got stuff to do. I'll just tie it to a tree. And right at that moment is when you all were bringing up women as bringers of peace and social change. And Mary Robinson, do you want to just chime in a little more about, you know, what you and Noreen were saying about women as bringers of peace in the Irish tradition? And Mary Robinson, yes.
Yeah. Well, it goes back, of course, to Bridget. And these stories about her being a mediator in the Irish tradition and dissuading people, you know, kings to go to war and playing little tricks to stop wars from occurring. And I was the other night, I came across this great book on the Brehon Laws, Brehon, B-R-E-H-O-N. And the Brehon Laws were the Celtic code of the Celtic legal system, were known as the Brehon Laws. A Brehon was the Irish word for a judge. And this was one of the most codified legal systems of the ancient world, on par with the Roman legal system. So the Celts and the Irish Celts had a very strong legalistic mind, you know, and was fascinating too. A lot of it was an oral tradition, so not legislated, not written down, but actually passed on orally as well too. So these judges held this codified wisdom They held it in, but they knew it off by heart, you know. And the Breton Laws, I went back to it, and it's a book by Jo Kerrigan, who's a Irish woman, academic, historian, medieval historian, and great award-winning historian. And she wrote this book on the Breton Laws, and she said something very interesting in it. Hang on, let me see. She says, in ancient Ireland, women took many rights for granted that modern women are only recently regaining. So, so the status of women in ancient Ireland was much higher than even our civilized modern world has only very recently caught up with, you know. And this tract of law was centuries old, you know, if not millennia old, this society that held women in a place that our modern, you know, progressive society has only recently caught up with. So certainly there was the idea that women had a power within society that was to be respected and even feared. And I was talking, I'm a student of international relations, and one of my great heroes when I was in college was a woman called Mary Robinson. And Mary Robinson was elected as the first president of Ireland. And she's a wonderful figure, a lawyer herself by training. And she also drew on Celtic wisdom often in her speeches and in her gestures. And one of the first things she did at the presidential residence in Ireland, she put a lantern in the window of the house, a lantern that was there to welcome the Irish diaspora, the Irish all around the world who'd had to leave Ireland over the centuries too. And this was back in the early 90s when Ireland was just gaining its confidence as stepping into its contemporary esteem as a country among the nations of the world. You know, Ireland has been coming out of this post-colonial identity for a long time. And Mary Robinson represented a huge step in Irish confidence. And one of those great things of confidence was acknowledging the generations of Irish who tragically had to leave the country, you know. And she was able to put this beacon of light in the presidential house and say, actually, we're welcoming you. We're facing that terrible grief now. And we're even inviting that grief to come back to Ireland and reinvigorate, to replenish the soil that had been depleted. She also referred to she used to refer to the fifth province in Ireland, and Ireland is divided into four provinces, four major sections, you know, four quarters. But the Irish language word for these four quarters is quigga, which means a fifth. So encoded in the ancient language is a secret hidden fifth province. And nobody has been able to find where that fifth province is. And of course, that's because the fifth province is right between your legs where you're standing. The fifth province is your perspective on things. And if you look at the cross, you know, the Celtic cross, you have the four points and they meet in the center. And that's the fifth province, the center of it all, which is yourself. And that's you looking at it. So Mary Robinson used to refer to that as also the place of the imagination, our utopian yearning and aspiration for a brighter future, you know, and not some pessimistic post-apocalyptic sort of a sense of inevitability in the future, but actually a future where we raise our heads and look to a horizon of hope and of beauty. So she often referred to that fifth province. It was extremely inspiring when she was speaking in these ways back in the early 90s in Ireland. Ireland was also about to catapult itself out of a very restrictive authoritarian Roman Catholicism that had leached the country of its self-esteem through abuse of all shades, of all diabolical shades. And the Roman Catholic Church in Ireland had totally infiltrated Irish society. And Mary Robinson was a pioneer showing her generation that there was another way to be Irish, that did not have to be associated with the old Irish Roman Catholic identity and power structure. So not only was it extremely stirring emotionally, it was also extremely radical politically and socially at the time too. And she went on from her position as the President of Ireland to become the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights.
Right.
And I was about to say during a very controversial time, but when is it not a controversial time to be someone blowing a whistle for human rights, you know? And of course, Mary... Yeah, go on.
Oh, sorry. I mean, but she led the anti-mines campaign, right?
She did. She did. And yeah. She also stood up to, you know, some of the great... To the great superpower of the world here in the United States of America, and fell out of favor and receive us on the back foot of a lot of pressure to keep quiet, you know. And
right.
She writes about this in a beautiful autobiography called Everybody Matters.
Was
published a number of years ago. And it's a great read for anyone interested in this kind of thing. And Mary, she's just so full of integrity. You can hear her voice through it all.
And she's actually a friend of mine on Facebook.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. She's humble. She's very humble. Look, a shout out to Mary Robinson. Because I'm like, right, the anti-mind, yes, it's all coming together. Welcome, Mary Robinson, with Bridget putting a cloak around you. You know, when you speak about the Irish, you know, heritage, the history way back of when it was pretty cool for women, and they're same with the Middle East. You know, it's like if you read the Thousand and One Nights, it's all women redeemers and tricksters and fantastic people. Scheherazade means city redeemer, and her sister, you know, and then it gets edited out. You know, but so the history is stored in the myth and the fable, but it's real, right? It's got an echo to it. So we're coming up on our usual kind of mid show break, where we have often in the past played music, but why do that when you're here? Is there a song that is yearning to come forth?
Oh, goody. It certainly is, and one of joy. And I love that utopian yearning there of the Fifth Province. And I'll sing a song. Let me take down my guitar here from the wall.
Yes, and we're going to come and you'll do that, which is wonderful, and then we're going to come back to the number 5 and 5th and the quiga and quintiles and Venus. All right, so
let's see how I didn't tune. That'll do. So this is a great song of yearning for that Fifth Province. This is a poem by Ireland's national poet William Butler Yeats. Mm-hmm. And Yeats died around 1938 or 39, but Yeats was involved in was a poet, but was at the forefront of this Irish cultural revival movement back in the late 1800s that really paved the way for Irish national independence from the British Empire. And after Ireland got its independence, William Butler Yeats really became a statesman. He was a senator. And a social commentator, an extremely controversial and outspoken social activist, you know. And so he is the image of a poet activist. And this is a poem, one of his early ones, yearning for that place within. And it's called The Lake Isle of Innisfree. This is a setting. This is my own composition, my own response to that poem musically. So, Lake Isle of Innisfree. I will arise and go now and go to Innisfree. And a small cabin built there of clay and wattles made. 9 bean rows will I have there, and a hive for the honey bee. and live alone in the beloud glade. Some peace, therefore peace comes dropping slow, slow like the veils of the morning, to where the cricket sings. There midnight is all a glimmer, and noon a purple glow, and evening's filled with the linnet's wings, with the linnet's wings, with the linnet's wings. I will arise and go now, for always night and day I hear lake water lapping in low sounds by the shores. When I'm on the roadway or on the pavement's gray, I hear it in the deep heart's core, in the deep heart's core, in the deep heart's core, in the deep.
You've done it, lad. You've brought it alive, right? So by the singing and the saying, you know, of the story and the poem and the song, it comes alive. It's alive now. Mm. Yeah, and that's so wonderful. That's a very important poem to Robert Bly's Great Mother Conference, poetry conference that I, with many people, collaborated with him for 12 years, but that was especially, the lodge was named Innisfree. It was by a lake. And
oh,
it was a
my
very
goodness,
poem.
Wonderful.
Ah, so now
cool.
You've hummed it.
Yeah.
You've hummed it. You've hummed it in my heart. Mm. That was a great time. And a shout out to all of our beloved ancestors. You know, Robert Bly, as he said, bring in the poets and double the madness. We go, yes. Bring in the songsters, the bards, the poets and double the madness.
At least double.
At least double. There you go. That's right. That's right. That's right. I love all that. At least double. There's the Irish coming. That's wonderful. At least double with a wink and a nod, especially at dark times. I mean, that's the power of transcendent whimsy and cleverness and eloquence, you know, coming out of deep difficulty. And it's why I right. think, you know, the Irish and the Palestinians have always felt kin, the Palestinians or the Irish of the Middle East, you know. And we do want to gather our wits and combobulate and send, you know, we connect with that which is more powerful than ourselves in order to be effective, to make the world more beautiful. So that's kind of what we're doing there, and that's so wonderful.
Lovely.
And then just to go back to what you said, the quigga, is it the quigga? Is that what you said?
Yeah, quigga.
The fifth.
That's right.
The fifth. Mm. Right. Well, yeah, qui means five. Quintile is a division of the circle by
quintile,
five, right?
Yes. Lovely. Quig.
So,
yes. So five,
we,
from that.
So
yeah.
We love five. Five is sacred to Venus. Venus forms a five-petaled orbital design over 8 years. Yes. And five in nature is the number that gives rise to spirals, which is nature's way of resolving conflict. So what you were saying, the yearning for the fifth place, right? It's the fifth place. It's the spiraling out of polarity. It's the place of peace. It's the center of the storm, you know, not whacked around the edges. So you did that. That's really great. And then
lovely. They could do with a dose of that down at the Pentagon as well, too, couldn't they?
Yes. Cool it all out. I love a radio guest and colleague, Sophie Strand, a young mythology, wonderful wizardess. She says, don't pray to Dionysus, pray as Dionysus. And it's like, oh, that's funny. I mean, is it too heretical to say don't pray to Bridget, pray as Bridget?
And fascinating.
I mean, the Irish are heretics. Can we pray as Bridget? Yeah. What would that mean?
That's beautiful. That's honoring the process, you see, that when we over invest in the goal, in the product of things, we become delusional, you know, and that the process must be there. All prayer comes from you. It doesn't exist in some vacuum. That I'm very involved with academia from a great family of academics and anthropologists, and of course the great thing in modern anthropology. Anthropology came out of imperialism, you know, where the great empires of Western Europe would send people abroad to study the strange and unusual rites and rituals of barbarians around the world. And eventually anthropology took this turn and recognized that it's impossible for an anthropologist to enter into a society without interfering with that society and messing up the results, you know. And even I believe quantum physics has a similar dynamic, where when you try to locate the position of a subatomic particle, when you try to locate it, you interfere with its velocity. And if you try to measure its velocity, you interfere with its location, you know. So it's actually technically impossible to get both position and velocity objectively. So there's always you, there's always the person who's part of every act, every perception. And when we start to think of ourselves as abstract from that reality, I think that's when we get into trouble.
That's great. And there's the wonderful Haitian proverb that says, when the anthropologist arrives, the gods depart. Kind of like what you were talking about and with the physics, and we go, it's a wink and a nod. It's like, yeah, to study the thing is to be distanced from the thing. And it's like the word indigenous comes out of colonialism. Sim Kern, a wonderful person I follow on Instagram, mentioned this. She did a whole thing on, you know, indigenous and settler complexity. And she said the word indigenous, which means sprung from the land, but it arises in the 1660s at the height of colonialism, because it was a word used by the colonists to describe the flora and fauna that were already living there that they were about to despoil, right, as indigenous. So it was always in a binary, right?
Yes.
And what you're saying, yeah.
Yes.
What you're saying, yeah.
And then, of course, it is by calling something else indigenous, it means that you are not, are detached, you're above the concept of being from any land. I'm not from a land, you are the ones from the land, and I am way above that.
It's
a false thing, yeah.
Well, it's an all too short trip from, you know, indigenous to resources. Right.
Exactly.
So, anyway, so to be mined, right? I want to kind of guide us back to participatory animism, right? Which is, you know, not resources, you know. And as many have said, and just we all feel and hum, you know, if the mountain has a name, if it's associated with a folk hero, we relate to it. If it's it's just coal resources to be mined, you know. So the quality of animism. And I love you saying, you know, the delusional world. So the word delusion comes from de ludo, which means out of the game.
And, oh, and, yes.
Isn't that great? And so lovely, in Ludo is in the game, and that's what illusion means. So de Ludo is out of the game. In Ludo, in the game, is illusion, meaning when we're playing with myth and metaphors, we're in the game. You know, and you know, James Carr says a wonderful thing about finite and infinite games. A finite game's about winning, infinite game's about keeping everything in play. Right? So,
cool.
So
that's and you know, that's bringing to mind totally off the Celtic track. But I made a wonderful friendship with this Persian American woman performer and translator of the works of Rumi. Her name is Hala Lisa Ghafouri, and she came to Ireland on one of our journeys that we lead in Ireland. And she was just finishing, she was putting the final touches on her second publication of Rumi translations. And she really is the next generation, a real contemporary translation of Rumi. And she goes back to her grandmother, her Persian grandmother and Persian mother, and translates in partnership with her mother these words of Rumi, you know, but with a very particular and much more stringent type of approach than some of the Western translations. And she can be quite critical of previous translations as well.
Good. No, that's good. That's good. We want standards. We want standards. I mean, I'm buddies with Coleman Barks, who is the great popularizer of Rumi and almost turned it into Hallmark greeting cards. But yeah, I love Coleman. And then there's other people that Robert Bly would go, I'm going to kill him. Not Coleman, but the other person, because it was just soppy. You know, and I do love the Persian women allies coming in going, no, just stop it. Right.
Have you heard of Hala Ghafouri? Have you heard of her translation called Gold?
No.
Cool. You'll love it. And she touches on this issue of translation and perspective, you know, in the introduction. Good. I won't go into, but what I will do is give you a translation of one of Rumi's pieces, which is the title poem, Gold, you know, and the image of gold. I was thinking of it. You were talking about mining and resources and the animism, and of course, gold being, you know, the thing that has transfixed humanity for millennia, that thing that has to be discovered and mined. And of course, Rumi turns it up all on his head. And he's talking about gold here in the context of laughter as well. And it was at a time I came across this poem and Hala at a time in my life when my son was just born, my first son. It's about a year and a half ago. And I discovered with my son that the first ways that humans can truly communicate and have a two-way conversation is through the medium of laughter and smiling. That's the first conversation I had with my son was through that medium, through the language of smiling and laughter. Of course, there's the communication of crying and screaming, but that's a one-way street. But the two-way thing begins with the smile and the laughter. And I thought to myself, well, isn't that evidence that laughter and smiling is the basis of all human communication? And yet, where are the linguists and where are the anthropologists and sociologists establishing institutes for laughter? Where is the research into smiling and social cohesion? Laughter is the basis of all human connection and communication. And then, of course, I came across Hala's work. A friend of mine sent me this poem, and it just hit me right between the eyes as I was contemplating this, the profundity of laughter. And of course, Rumi hits me with this. And if you hear, it's a short piece, but my God, the layers and layers of complexity that he reveals about the dynamic of laughter here, the whole rainbow, the whole spectrum of human being is, he looks through the lens of laughter, and he says, and Hala translates Rumi saying, I've been short on courage. I've been short on courage, but I have a heart of sunlight straight from the king's hand. I stir up laughter even in those who fear joy. I stir up laughter even in those who fear joy. Crack open my shell, steal the pearl, I'll still be laughing. It's the rookies who laugh only when they win. Look at the furnace. Look at the stones. See the glowing red veins? Gold, laughing in fire, daring you to prove you're no fake. laugh even when you lose. We're fodder for death, so learn to laugh from the angel of death. He laughs at the jeweled belt and crowns of kings. All that splendor's just on loan. Treetop blossoms erupt in laughter. Petals rain down. Laugh like the bud of a flower hugging the ground. Its hidden smile opens to a laugh that lasts a lifetime.
That is a great trickster anthem and a great trickster translation. All right, wait. Spell this wonderful woman Halal's name for all of us.
Hala, H-A-L-E-H, Liza, L-I-Z-A, Gafori, G-A-F-O-R-I. I believe only one F there. And the name of her book is Gold, and it's been highly critically acclaimed. And her publisher has pushed her to do a second one, which might even have been released. She's based in New York City and is a wonderful performer, musician, singer. So she performs this poetry in an extraordinarily vibrant way as well, too. And it was just an absolute honor to have her over in Ireland, showing her around our part of the world. And we had all sorts of plans to do some Persian Celtic exchange, which sleeves to reveal at some stage. Yeah.
Oh, I want to be a fly on the wall or a raven on a branch overhead of that one. Yes, absolutely. No, I love that. And the title of that poem is Gold?
I believe so, yeah. But I can't recall. But it's in that
collection. I stir up laughter. Yeah. I stir up laughter in those who fear joy. That's it. That's it. I'm going to have that tattooed. That's good. Really,
I know,
super wonderful. And that, you know, and such
the defiance of it. Yeah.
I love Coleman, right? But Coleman did not know the language, right? I mean, he's the most celebrated. He got invited to Iran and everything. And, you know, Robert just said, here, Coleman, you know, just take these English translations and make them more fun. I mean, that's really what he did, right? He didn't go to the source.
Yes.
Yeah, and he was curiously outside the culture, but that was okay. He got it out here for many, and then the other things are many of them are just kind of soppy New Age stuff, and it's like that's terrible. This is feels fabulous. It's like she's my new favorite roomie.
I just looked to my bookshelf here, and it's there. And it's published by the New York Review, the New York Review of Books. 2022, called Gold. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And maybe I can. Yeah. We'll pretend we're backstage for a second here, and maybe you could send me a copy of that poem. It's just so wonderful.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
We will spiral it forward.
That's what I thought. She doesn't have titles of the poems because I think isn't totally. A congruent to the way they were written by him back then. I think they were sort of little small segments or parts of bigger things. So anyway, and her introductions in that book where she kind of lays bare a few other perspectives of translators who came before her, which is very interesting. A generational shift too, yeah.
Oh, you're doing a great thing here. You're painting reality with the palette of your connections, going here and put this next to this and go follow this person. That's so wonderful. Well, the Persian Celtic connection, the Persian Middle Eastern connection, it's there somewhere. I mean, do you know about it? I mean, I can feel it in the music and the thing. You know, I mean, is there something that you know about that?
Well, it's interesting, like the linguists in the early 1900s began to spot similarities between the Irish language and Sanskrit from northern India. And there are a few other sort of cultural memes. The Bridget's Cross is one. I traveled to Sri Lanka a few years ago, and all around the roadsides is this Bridget's Cross. And I said to my friends, I said, what's this over here? And they said, oh, that's the logo of the National Roads Authority. And it's exactly like the Bridget's Cross, this off-centered cross, you know. But the linguists discovered that the ancient Irish and the Sanskrit had these linguistic roots that they shared, you know. And what happened was there was this great Indo-European migration from North India that went all the way across Europe and hit Ireland. And then subsequently, Greek and Roman civilization erupted and Latinized or Romanized the languages of Europe. But on the very west coast of Europe, Ireland hung on to the language that wasn't Latinized or Romanized. And so the Irish language contained within it those very early pre-Greek and Roman Indo-European roots. So, yeah, so it's there linguistically. Perhaps you can hear something from the old style of singing in Ireland as well, too, perhaps, and that Bridget's Cross and a couple of other things like that, yeah.
And then I love that I first heard this. I love the Caribbean. I love the Caribbean. I love the culture. Mm. I love the lilt of the voice. And I go, the lilt of the Caribbean voice, it's kind of Irish. And then, years later, yeah. I read this excellent essay on the voodoo roots of jazz and rock and roll by Michael Ventura.
Right.
In it, he says, in the 1660s, Oliver Cromwell's brother in charge of Ireland sold thousands of pagan Irish women and babies into slavery in the Caribbean. And I go, I knew it. And I went, and all my Caribbean friends are like, yeah, man, we know that. That's why all the names are McCarthy and the thing and the whatever. But I love that I could hear it. I could hear it. It's that lilting playfulness that is earned out of deep suffering. It's that poem, you know, that you just read. It's the Persian Celtic Caribbean conference. That's what we're looking at.
that sounds like a good party, doesn't it?
Right. Well, and let's add New Orleans in there. The Persian Celtic Caribbean New Orleans, you know, conference. And it's a moving thing. It's a, you know, we go to all those places.
You're right. It's a whole caravan. Yeah. A whole parade.
It is a caravan. It is a caravan. That's super, super wonderful. Yeah. Well, that's great because, you know, I said that, you know, during your presentation today, which people can find out about from your website and get a recording, you know, the moon was in Libra at those wonderful degrees. And then now as we do this, the moon has entered Scorpio. So it's like that was charming and fun. And now moon in Scorpio has a beautiful quintile. All right. There's the five again, the fifth place. The quintile to Venus, so it's deep, deep, dedicated, spicy magic, and the capacity to metabolize poison, you know, and the remembering of what's been lost, you know, and the moon squares Pluto. So it's like, and to bring this positive backstage magic into the community realm. And so our chart is abounding, all of us, we don't even need to know it, abounding with quintiles. Cool. The sun quintiles Pallas, whose images Inca princess pleads for the life of her children. So it's like communities, collective, pleading for the life of children everywhere, you know, in Gaza and Somalia and to be able to look at things from many different angles. Mm. And then the moon to Venus quintile. So this spiciness, you know, that you've opened doors for to come in the beautiful and the useful, you know, that the opposite of aesthetic is anesthetic.
And so here's the sting in the tail, which is the commercial break. That if any of your listeners, I just checked, if you Google Journey of Your Soul in Ireland, our website comes up, Journey of Your Soul in Ireland. And we use the Irish language version, Thrus Donam. Thrus Donam is Journey of Your Soul. So if you were to Google Journey of Your Soul in Ireland, our website will come up. And we've just launched a membership community. So every month we will gather live on Zoom, just as we did today, but it'll be for a two-hour session or for as long as we want. And at the start of the month, we will release a newsletter with all sorts of materials to contemplate and to digest. And the second Saturday, we have a whole bank of pre-recorded events, just like the ones that you saw today. We'll release one of those and then the live one. So every month we will be going through the wheel of the year based on the four Celtic seasons, and each month as we go through it, me, my brother and my mother. And we already have, we just launched it, and a whole raft of people. I see all these names coming into my inbox. All these people are joining us right now. So if anyone out there feels resonating with this, if this beauty is an antidote to a certain poison within you, this is a this is a good place for you to come. And anyone listening to this show, I'm sure, would be in resonance, and we'd be honored to have along with us for the ride. And you get to meet my mother and my brother as well, too. Very formidable and hilarious characters in their own right. Yes. So,
yes, and keepers of many, many traditions, right? Your mother is the high priestess of Gregorian chanting and a voice for peace. But let me just insert here, or tag along, in the spirit of reciprocal blessing, going, that's wonderful. Once a month with Owen and his family. If that's, you know, you can do once a week with Caroline from February 6th through the equinox. And it fits very well together. It fits very well together. And you might, you know, even tell those people, the more the merrier the mojo.
What are you planning?
Well, I do a Zoom gathering on Tuesdays, and it will resume on February 6th, 9 p.m. East Coast, 6 p.m. West Coast. And it's Dreaming the News. We bring in the news, and then what are the mythic characters, and how can we participate, and the more words, the more metaphors, the more whatever, and what can we invite in. So it's in keeping with yourself, you know. It's kinned.
Beautiful.
It's kinned.
I've got to, I've got to check more that information. Out. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, good,
I've
good.
I've got to check
yeah,
that out.
And maybe, yeah. maybe you will be a guest some Tuesday. Yeah,
I'd be a guest, yeah. And we'll let our own community know about it too, because there's a whole bunch interested in the mytho, poetic, astrological perspective, you know. Yeah.
It all works together. That's wonderful. We must go, but let us kahoot in perpetuity in some form of reciprocal blessing. Thank you so much, Elena Sullivan.
And again, such an honor to have you with us today, and to all your audience there. Thank you so much.
That's great. And more info and everything at coyotenetworknews.com. And thanks always to Kirsten Thomas. And we will be back reconvening next week. Thank you, team.